Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Wolves making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. Earlier today, John Paxson, executive VP of the Chicago Bulls, was on these airwaves, your home for Bulls basketball. Mm-hmm. I still have to get used to saying that. He was on at the Mully and Hanley show. Barry Rosner was sitting in, and the Bulls have Jabari Parker. And the Bulls wanted him despite his injury problems.
Jabari Parker makes sense in a lot of different levels. Where's the front office excitement when it comes to adding someone at 23 years old who obviously has gone through the injury adversity but comes home?
Yeah, he has, and you know, obviously that's those things play a part in everything. But you know, you have to look at the climate of the league right now, and you know, we've talked a lot about you know, not making long term financial things that bind us, and so this one made a lot of sense. I mean, we're in a position still in what we, you know, what is a rebuild after we traded Jimmy, of just trying to get talented young players. And so the fact that Jabari wanted to be here, the fact that our interest was mutual, made it something that we thought was, you know, high reward, low risk. And, you know, the hope is, obviously, that you know, he plays great. And, you know, it'll be a little bit like it was with Zach last year in terms of, you know, he came back and he ended up playing, I believe, the last 30 games of the year for Milwaukee and looked really good. So we're going to, you know, we feel like we've got a lot of young talent, and we're going to have to figure out how to mesh that all together. We never felt like we were looking for a perfect fit basketball-wise, so to speak, you know, positionally and all that type of thing. But the talent that Jabari has and we think can bring to the team is something that we were really excited about.
John, it's hard to see the downside to this. And, you know, the fact is, though, in your position, you have to examine all the possibilities and consider what the risks or downsides might be. What is it? If there is one, what would it be?
Well, there's really, like, I guess it's a good question, because we asked ourselves the same things, and we said there's really no risk. I mean, obviously, you go into this and you want it to work. You want sure. Jabari to play well and all those things. But if for some reason he would get hurt again or something like that, we basically rolled the dice for a year and said, you know, this was worth it. We obviously had cap money to spend this year, even after signing Zach. And like I said, the philosophy of not going out long term gives us an opportunity, if we choose to, you know, to be a player in free agency in 2019. If we pick up Jabari, or you know, we got a team option on him, which allows us to do some things that you know, would benefit both us and Jabari, you know, where we could go out even further. But it helps us be a player in maybe 2020 as well. So, you know, given the situation we're in after last year, just maintaining the position to be creative and do some things is a really good one for us. And you know, when you throw in the mix, I guess what excites us as much as anything is that in 13 months we've added six young players that all have talent. Now the difficulty now is finding how they work together, and also knowing that in this league it's difficult to win with, you know, young guys. But I think, you know, I've been around Chicago since '85, and I do know that when you put a team out on the floor that plays hard, they're a team that fans can get behind, then that's where we needed to start from now, and I think we're starting to do that with this group.
Pax, when you look at defensive metrics, it's not too flattering for Zach and for Jabari, but I don't know how accurate or how you can really, if those are accurately reflective of the player. When you look at those numbers, I know you how much you value defense. Is that a concern with the young group and those two guys specifically?
Well, we live in an analytic world now. There's no question about it. And you're right, Zach and Jabari analytically, defensively have been, you know, below average. I think what you know when you look at the game and you look at young players, I've always said this and I believe it completely. The defensive side of the floor is the hardest one to get guys to buy into. You know, they grow up believing that putting the ball in the basket's the only way to get recognized, and especially in this business, people believe the only way to get paid is to be a high volume scorer. We're still talking about two 23-year-old young players that still have a lot to learn. They're super talented, you know, they're super athletic. They can learn that end. They can get better at that end. And that's what will be asked of them. And especially in the game today where so much switching is going on now. You know, you see, because the screen and roll has become the predominant part of our game, most teams now to not compromise the defense where you're playing two defenders against the ball handler, there's a lot of switching out on the perimeter. And so the individual defense on the ball is something that's obviously very important. But what I've seen with young players, and you know, this goes back to with Derrick Rose, the area where Derrick defensively really had to learn, and it took him several years, was off the ball. You know, where you're, you know, just because you're not guarding a certain player who has the ball in his hands, it's still staying in a stance and seeing ball in your man and looking for cutters. And that's areas that you know, all of our young guys have to continue to improve on. And I do know that our staff works on those concepts all the time. And so my point is this, they can get better. But you're right, the metrics and the analytics say that they haven't been good. But it's still a team game conceptually. You need help defenders, so I think they can get better. But again, we were in a position where we had to look at the potential talent in all of this, and so we continue to chip away at that.
John, you finally made the decision to go this route with a rebuild, and that's no easy call. But you finally did it, and in 13 months, you've managed to put five lottery picks on the floor who are 20, some of them, well...
Under 24, kind
of,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all of them under 24, some of them much younger than that. Could you have guessed in your wildest imagination that this could be possible in 13 months?
Well, not really, but the goal was, you know, we said this when we traded Jimmy, was to get a jump start on it by grabbing, you know, three young talented players. And you know, we struggled last year in a lot of areas, but injuries did play a little part in that. You know, Zach was coming back from the ACL. We our expectations for him going into the season were always, let's just get him back on the floor so he plays and finds a rhythm. And you know, he's such a talented kid that this off season where he's going to get himself into great shape, that will benefit him when we get to training camp. And you know, Chris Dunn was really kind of coming into his own when he had that hard fall against Golden State and got the concussion. He was never really the same after that. And of course Lowry. So we got a jump start on it all. And you know, the thing is, it's kind of lost in all this is that we still have, you know, a couple guys behind some of these young players that are still young. Denzel Valentine, who had a really good year for us last year, coming off the bench as a scorer. Bobby Portis, you know, who's very good. And then, you know, we haven't even talked about our rookies here. You know, we Wendell Carter, we think has a really bright future and will be a really nice fit next to Lowry as they grow as NBA players over the next 3 or 4 years. And you know, and then Chandler Hutchinson, we needed. We felt for a long time we need wings that have length and athleticism, that have versatility where they can handle the ball and pass. And he's a developing player. But, again, when you project out maybe 2, 3, 4 years, you think that he could be a very good player in the league. So, yeah, we're excited about it. I think that, you know, if you're a fan of our team, that you'll look at this group and you'll say, hey, they do have some potential. Now, thing that falls on Gar and myself and the staff going forward is how do we get these pieces to work? I think the because they played so few minutes together last year, and you know the three new guys that we had, and now we're throwing Wendell and Chandler and Jabari into that mix. The exciting thing is to see how they do mesh and what that can mean for our basketball team. And I know Fred's excited about the possibilities offensively and what we can do. And yeah, so it's for us, it's an exciting time because we feel like it's really the beginning of something. But we understand it's on us, and we also understand that in this league, you have to have star basketball players to win at a high level, and that's on us. We hope that through the draft, we're grooming some of those guys to become that, but we also understand what that means moving forward in free agency.
Well, that said, Pax, is there a downside to throwing those guys out there, including Wendell, from day one? And just there's our young core, and they're on the floor together, and you know, God bless Robin Lopez and all that he brings to this team, and he's a you know he's a great pros pro. But you know, if you want to get to it and you want those guys to mesh together, why is there a reason you wouldn't have them out there opening night?
Well, we have a lot of discussions that need to take place before training camp opens, and the one thing I'll say is this: that you know we're in a culture now where so many of these young kids grow up and they're just kind of handed things, and they're you know. The AAU system is basically, if you're talented enough, you're going to play, you know, and it doesn't matter. We don't want to have that type of culture. We want our young guys to earn their time out on the floor, and they earn it by working. It's as simple as that. They earn it by showing that they care about the game and about, you know, what playing time means to them. They do that through the practice floor. They do it in the weight room. They show us all the signs. But then you get into training camp, and competition's a good thing. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the areas that, you know, sometimes gets kind of pushed under the rug is that you want guys to compete. You want them to earn spots. And so I think we're going to have a really, really healthy September when the entire team comes back after Labor Day, and then we get them into, you know, that type of thing, building up to training camp at the end of September. And we want a competitive camp, and I think it will be. So it's a little bit delicate, you know, in terms of that. Yes, you want your young guys to play because I believe this to my core that for young players to develop, they need consistent time over consistent consistent minutes over consistent time. So you know, we saw it last year. We finally got an injured Cameron Payne out for the last 25 games. He did some things we really liked in terms of pushing the basketball and running an offense, and he'll have that role behind Chris Dunn again this year. So it's a little bit delicate, but we don't want to hand guys anything just because we've drafted them high. They've got to earn it, but we feel like we got high character guys in terms of like Wendell and Chandler, and we know their work ethic. So I don't think that will be an issue. But again, competition during camp, all those things will determine how much guys play.
John, in the league you grew up in, it always seemed like it was a heck of a lot easier to teach a guy how to play defense than it was to teach a guy how to play offense. I mean, you had post moves or you didn't. You could, you could probably learn to shoot, but if you didn't have an offensive game, it probably wasn't going to come. Which is why I kind of chuckle when I hear about guys with great offensive potential who supposedly can't play any defense. Am I wrong, or if you're athletic, can you learn to play defense in this league?
You should be able to. I mean, defense is a lot of things, but it's most of all, it's wanting to play that end, taking pride in playing that end. The difference in the game now, back when I played, is how physical you could be defensively out on the perimeter. You know, you could get a hand on a guy a little bit and, you know, give yourself a chance. But the rules have changed, and rightly so. You know, there's a... you know, a standard of freedom of movement that the league has adopted several years ago. And it's given our skilled offensive players on the perimeter great freedom to do what they do best. I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, Michael Jordan defensively, if he could lock that strong hand on you out on the perimeter, you couldn't go anywhere. But our guys can go places now. So, but I do think the defensive end can be learned and taught. A lot of it is understanding concepts defensively, help where you're, you know, position of your feet. I think all these things speak to the fundamentals of the game, and you know that's where I think it gets maybe in our game, you know, everybody thinks, okay, NBA, these are the highest skilled players, but and they are, but we're also drafting so many young kids who are growing up in a system that doesn't necessarily give the time to the fundamentals that maybe we once did. You know, I grew up in an era where you went to teaching camps. You know, there was a camp on the East Coast called Five-Star Basketball Camp in the Pittsburgh area. I mean, you go to those camps for a couple weeks a summer. It was, you know, you had stations for 2.5 hours every morning that drilled the fundamentals. You had high school coaches who were teachers teaching those skills. And so much of this goes back to the fundamental teaching of the game. And we sometimes get so wrapped up in, you know, athleticism and what guys can do, you know, physically and all that, but the game is still a fundamental game. So yes, all these things can be improved upon, especially if you're a great athlete. And we all are banking on guys like, you know, Zach and Jabari and Lauri Markkanen. You know, you go down the list of our guys that they, with experience and with proper teaching, they should get better.
Well, let's go, Pax, but I don't know if you paid much attention to it. I didn't think he had any choice but to match the offer sheet for Zach LaVine. But yeah, SI said it was, you know, they graded the move as a D. And, you know, I heard a lot of national blowback. And given what you gave up to get an asset like Zach LaVine at his age, did that surprise you, some of the NBA talk or talk in NBA circles, that you should have done something differently?
No. And you know what? That's And we understand that's all a part of it. You know, everybody's quick to grade things. You know, we do it with the draft, you know, the day after the draft when these guys haven't stepped one foot on the court. You know, I mean, it's just the nature of the business and people have jobs to do. But, you know, we had actually offered Zach a very fair offer right out of the gate. And, you know, but the system is set up the way it is. As a restricted free agent, he was able to go out, get the offer that someone wanted to give him, and you know, for us it was our decision to match. And one of the things that we looked at and considered is that in the next few years the salary cap is moving up significantly. It's going to go up by $8 million at one point, and that's, you know, when you look at the deal in terms of just that one factor, how the cap is going to go up over the lifetime of Zach's contract, you know, you can look at it a little differently in terms of what those dollars really mean to the percentage of your cap. So you know, and the other thing too is, look, you're right. I mean, every situation is different. We had to factor in that Zach was a part of the deal last year we made for Jimmy, and he is an important guy in terms of his age, his athleticism, his shooting ability, and last year we just wanted to get him back on the floor playing significant minutes where he could get his legs underneath him. When players go out and they sign contracts like this, they understand what's at stake for them too. And you know, we've got a great relationship with Zach. He's a really good kid. He's a pleaser. He wants to do well for the team. He likes his teammates and our young group. So we felt at the end of the day, you know, something we wanted to do, and you know, in many ways for us, it just became, okay, this is it. We're moving forward. Zach's our starting two guard, and you know, let's keep moving.
That was some really coachy stuff from John Paxson. You don't normally hear him get quite that granular. It was really good stuff about analytics and referring to learning defense and talking about it. Early on, he talked about, you know, seeing your man and knowing where the ball is and staying in your stance and going all the way to Five-Star Basketball Camp there. That was really good.
Kind of feels to me like he's been doing more of that, stepping more into that part of discussion over the last 6 months or so.
Maybe. I love the coaching stuff from him. I mean, going back to Pax as a broadcaster, I mean, during games, when he was doing color on the radio, there was nobody better at actually telling you what was going on and why it was going on. I like to hear that. I like to hear that rather than just sort of big picture 10,000 feet stuff about the team. If he's talking about, you know, this concept, can you get better defensively? And he's describing actual ways where, yes, guys can get better defensively.
Yeah, it's one thing to acknowledge potential shortcomings. It's another thing to diagnose how we think these players fit the getting better mold, right? How guys who have been otherwise unwilling at times to defend can be, you know, forced into caring just a little bit more, perhaps.
Really cool. The segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. When we come back, we're going to give away a meet and greet for you and a guest with Cubs manager Joe Maddon. So be listening for your chance to win on The Score.
Well, say, Fred, that's on you. Coach him up, Freddie.
Yeah, what's the thing you heard in the CBA all the time? If you can play, if you're that athletic on offense, if you can play that type of offense, you ought to be able to play a little bit of defense.
Nah, I
got to get older and chew a cigar more for that.
He didn't smoke cigars, but I can only hear it in Mauro Panaggio's voice. Anybody who can play offense can play defense.
He's kind of got to want it some. Meanwhile, you know what I thought a little bit last night as I was thinking about this, you know, having Jabari Parker on the show tomorrow after the introductory press conference that we'll carry here at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow morning on the show, on the Bernstein and McKnight show, I was thinking a bit about my issues with the offense and the clunkiness that may be involved getting things going. I've come around a little bit to throwing things together and the risk that's not there financially in throwing that Bulls roster together the way it's been shaped. But isn't the onus now on Chris Dunn to be a little bit more of a distributing point guard than he was last season?
Even though when we were excited about him, he was closing out games.
Taking stuff to the basket, taking shots. And I mean, already defensively, he's your best proven player on the court defensively, right? Your best starter for sure. I have a lot of hopes for Wendell Carter Jr. And at the five, that's great.
He's played
rookie.
NBA basketball
before. So that's a small issue. I like Chris Dunn from that regard, but if you're looking at the offensive games that, and you heard Pax talk about it with Hanley and with Rosner this morning, those are me first, my turn kind of guys at times, whether it's Parker or whether it's LaVine.
And that's a point guard's job, is to keep the ball out of the hands of certain guys at certain times as much as it is to have the ball in the hands of certain guys at certain times.
And for Chris Dunn, that kind of task, that ability is going to be something that's asked as much of, or asked more often, almost as much as LaVine and Parker, to be asked to play defense. That's a skill set that Dunn has struggled to demonstrate over the course of 40 minutes.
Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. B, caller number 6 to The Score's contest line right now, 312-591-6700. And you and a guest win a meet and greet with Cubs manager Joe Maddon. The meet and greet follows our July 24th live broadcast with the Cubs skipper from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage at our downtown studios. Now, we're very busy. That's only part of what we are doing, that particular Joe Maddon live appearance on the 24th. Because leading up to that, this Friday, the 20th, we are going to be at Gallagher Way, right outside Wrigley Field, the plaza right there, set up in our usual spot. Hanging out, getting you back to baseball, and the baseball will have been back, actually, for the Cubs. For the rest of the league, it'll be returning.
Yeah, Cubs-Cardinals, one game.
Yep, but we'll be hanging out there at the Gallagher Way, right next to the park. We're actually up against the park.
Just kind of walk down the third baseline, outside the ballpark. We'll actually be on the third baseline. Those are good seats, though, if you can get them. Yeah, just walk down that way.
Speaking of good seats, there are still a handful of seats available. Not many, but if you want to do this, make sure you do this for the Cubs On Deck Luncheon with All-Star catcher Wilson Contreras and pitcher Mike Montgomery. That is July 23rd. That's Monday at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. It's presented by Xfinity and AZEK Building Products. If you want tickets, and you do want tickets, visit 670thescore.com/ondeck for more information. Got some baseball news?
Yeah, can I read you something somewhat confusing here? And I think, you know, context is important as we near the deadline. And, of course, tomorrow morning where the All-Star game is behind us and not in front of us.
Reading is good!
Where Manny Machado is likely to wear a uniform other than an Orioles uniform instead of the All-Star uniform that he's going to wear tonight. Bob Nightingale has this report, and he had it in just the break before we aired the John Paxton interview. The Baltimore Orioles, barring a last-minute snag, this is from Bob Nightingale, USA Today, barring a last-minute snag, will trade all-star shortstop Manny Machado to the Los Angeles Dodgers on Wednesday, according to a baseball official with direct knowledge of the deal. Okay, checks out. The official spoke to USA Today Sports on the condition of anonymity because the trade's not been finalized. Here's what gets kind of weird. The Milwaukee Brewers and Philadelphia Phillies are still in discussions with the Orioles.
What?
The Dodgers appear to be going all in with Machado for a two-plus month rental. At the break, they're 53-43. They sit in first place in the National League West. They lead the Diamondbacks by a half game and the Colorado Rockies by two games. With season endings, more goes on about the Dodgers. But the line here that is weird to me is, after confirming that the Orioles themselves believe they'll be trading Manny Machado to the Dodgers, Nightingale includes the Brewers and Philadelphia Phillies are still in discussions with the Orioles. So well, I ask you this. Remember all those conversations we had leading up? My obsession with the Orioles has paid off, I think, in some regard. And here's why. That is an ownership group that is unsettled, that has, at best, confusion amongst its ranks, and at worst, a power struggle going on with Brady Anderson, Angelos's two kids, Angelos himself, perhaps, Dan Duquette, Buck Showalter. It's this strange thing. And we've heard over and over again, whether it's from Jonah Carey last week, whether it's Jeff Sullivan, whether it's any of the guys that we've talked to, that you're not sure if you're the Dodgers, if you're the Phillies, if you're the Brewers, you're not sure who's pulling the trigger in that Orioles organization. And for Nightingale, an established veteran reporter,
yeah, the reporting angle on this is weird. It's really weird.
And to after giving you he's going to the Dodgers, the Orioles expect to trade him to the Dodgers. After that, to check up with, by the way, the Phillies and Brewers are still talking with the Orioles, it's got to make you wonder whether or not that confusion in the front office at Baltimore has leaked into other franchises, whether it's multiple, that's the result of an organization doesn't know its right from its left leaking into reports.
Yeah, that's a good point in that we don't know. Usually it's coming from the general manager, and you know when you got an established national guy who's an agent. But this is very strange because it's very possible he's getting what is quote unquote legit information. I'm not saying Nightingale's making anything up.
Not at all.
But he might be getting something from someone who is not necessarily in the decision making chain in the way that he thinks he is.
Possibly
because that chain changes.
You got to remember too that the Orioles have waited up until this point to trade the most valuable asset that's actually on the market right now. For a number of different reasons. One of the reasons that have led them up to this now is trying to create some kind of desperation amongst teams that need him so as to drive the price up on a guy you're only going to have for 2+ months. And if leaking this stuff around, if having this front office that puts you in the merry-go-round, you know, as soon as you start calling offices, start calling desk phones, all this stuff, if that's their way of drumming up interest, if that's the way of driving up prices,
it's weird to say expected.
Stand to alienate yourself.
But as a reporter, I guess everybody, we've all been trained differently. I think it's very hard to write an expected to be traded story, saying like, this is the deal that is the leader in the clubhouse right now. That means if there are any time there are other teams still bidding, there can be no expectation. My way of reporting that, and I'm not judging Bob Nightingale in this case. I have before in certain things, and I've had arguments with him on the air. Please. But what I would do is say Dodgers so far have made the best offer. That if negotiations were to end right now, the Dodgers would be offering the most and would be the likely landing spot. However, other teams are still bidding.
Here's how he wrote it in case you're just tuning in. Baltimore Orioles, barring a last-minute snag, will trade all-star shortstop Manny Machado to the Los Angeles Dodgers on Wednesday, according to a baseball official with direct knowledge of the deal. The Milwaukee Brewers and Philadelphia Phillies are still in discussions with the Orioles. That's how it's presented there. It's a convoluted landscape. I don't, like you, I don't necessarily blame Bob Nightingale for having to traverse that whole thing and figure out who's saying what and who has the power to do this, that, or the other. I mean, for instance, if you got from Dan Duquette, and I'm speculating completely, if you got from the GM, hey, we think this is going to happen. We've got a good deal here from the Dodgers. We think this is going to work. We've got ourselves enough prospects. We want to pull this trigger. But really, the thing is, Brady Anderson's making the moves? Do you not report the GM stuff? Do you not report that conversation you had?
It makes it difficult.
It makes it really tough.
Ask White House reporters right now how they figure out what's coming from where and who's making a decision and how to report. Seriously, it's very difficult for people to hew to the standards they've been taught when even the people involved are never quite sure how good the information is or who's in charge of coming up with a decision.
This from the 630. Does anybody know what team Machado wants to sign with long term, if any? Yeah, I would imagine some team he wants to sign with long term. But the
team
gonna
that's
be
going
giant.
To pay him $300 million or more is the one he wants to sign
yeah,
with.
That's the one. And you, I don't know if he's caught this, but before the home run derby, Machado was up there on the desk in the MLB Network, you know, kind of the three dudes up there. And he brought his nephew, his little nephew, right? Brother's kid. And they asked what team he thought, the nephew thought, that Manny Machado was going to get traded to. And the kid goes, the Yankees. And they pan over to Machado and he's got this stink face kind of thing going on. Yeah, like, list the out of the mouth of babes. Like the whole so I don't know, maybe if the Yankees cut to the shelf $350 million. He's liked Instagram posts of him in a Yankees uniform. Because we all know Instagram tells you everything.
But also, they're a wealthy team, and if you're going to be a free agent, why wouldn't you start throwing bouquets where the money is?
Of course you
Even if you don't end up there, it's still smart.
Milwaukee.
This segment brought to you by Orkin. Every home is unique. That's why Orkin relies on the latest science to get rid of pests. Visit Orkin.com today. Orkin, pest control down to a science. You mentioned Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of making fun of them as far as the money.
I don't mean to make fun of them. They just don't have it. I mean, facts are facts.
I do have some facts for you. They do have some more money than you think.
Milwaukee does?
In one regard. They're spiking in something, in fact, that could, if properly managed, result in them having more money.
Did the Lakefront Brewery raise their prices?
No, I'll let you know. And also,
that's a great brewery.
It really is. And the tour's good, too.
And more importantly,
leave happy.
We have yet one more chance on the other side of a break to win $1,000 in cash. You need that keyword, and you will have it next on the score. Manny Machado, that's the guy we're talking about. Some very complicated and confusing reporting regarding where he might end up. And you were joking about Milwaukee.
I would never joke. Yeah, it's a fine town.
Well, I agree.
I enjoy it immensely, especially in the summer.
There's a story here at Awful Announcing that says that the 2018 MLB All-Star Break, local TV ratings overall are flat from last year. So it's not the worst thing in the world, given that three of the top five locally rated teams in baseball have seen their ratings drop. The Cardinals are MLB's highest rated team still. Despite falling to third and firing their manager, averaging a 6.76 on Fox Sports Midwest. The Indians are at a 6.29 average rating on SportsTime Ohio. The Red Sox are up 19%. The fourth best local ratings in baseball belong to the Brewers, averaging 5.14 on Fox Sports Wisconsin. They've seen their ratings grow 46%. It is the third highest spike in MLB. The other teams that have seen their ratings increase substantially, the Angels, thanks to Shohei Ohtani, perhaps up 74%, the Braves up 50%, the Astros up 23%, and the Cubs are up 19% to a 4.13. What do you think the lowest rated teams are?
Do the Dodgers figure out their cable? Does that mess with this at all?
No.
Their cable
situation? I understand, right? That's extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that's going to mess with the list. It's got the Marlins.
The Oakland A's are up 12%.
Right.
To a 0.67.
They did it!
The White Sox are down 1%, of course, to a 0.83.
It's a good year. Yeah.
Of course they did. That could not be more perfect. And again, another channel where you always see Jason Benetti.
The 83.
Well, just wherever you happen to this lately, you turn on your television, Jason Benetti's there.
The A's are the lowest?
Yep.
Do you have any of the other tiered? I'd be fascinated to find out where the Marlins are given
the largest decrease is the Orioles. They've dropped 50%. The Tigers are down 44%. The Rays have dropped 20%. It doesn't have the full rankings, and no mention of the Marlins.
It makes sense. It makes sense.
But the Oakland A's, if you were listening earlier to the player poll, it is also the city that is least liked as far as road trips go. No one wants to go to Oakland.
No, because the whole thing sucks. The whole ballpark is awful.
I believe the Chamber of Commerce and the Department of Tourism for Oakland had the slogan, the whole thing sucks.
The whole thing. Remember they were trying to find land to build a new ballpark, and that there was toxic sludge underneath the land that they'd purchased, so they had to go to the local college, and the local college didn't want to sell them the land. You can't find land in Oakland, apparently, or anywhere around it to build a ballpark.
It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. We're doing this a lot lately, three times on this show, and for the foreseeable future, this hour's keyword is radio. Text radio to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is radio to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
Speaking of money in the game, by the way, you saw the release from the Green Bay Packers staying in Wisconsin from the Green Bay Packers earnings sheet, right? Because they're a publicly traded company, or
correct,
at least they issue pieces of paper that mean, I don't know, nothing.
But every team, they were one of the teams that showed what their share was of national television revenue.
Right.
And their share, I believe, was $255 million.
That's right, it was.
The highest number yet, and even with ratings in television in general dropping, football was safer than anywhere else, did better than most.
Never been more profitable.
And the game has never been more profitable, despite all the dire warnings, despite traumatic brain injury, despite lawsuits, despite anything, any frenzy whipped up about protesting police violence.
And despite the fact, even in the Packers reports, too, because it's a publicly traded franchise and you get yourself sort of, you get yourself the actual reports from earnings there, they did not put butts in seats the way they're used to up in Green Bay. And still, they turned in a profitable season. Without Aaron Rodgers an entire year, they still turned in a profitable season. So, to a certain degree, and you know, we've had this conversation a little bit during baseball's offseason, you know, and waiting for J.D. Martinez and for Yu Darvish even to sign their lucrative free agent deals, Jake Arrieta getting his deal. There's this alignment that happens between a fandom and a franchise, I think, that, you know, at times gets fans, at least in my opinion, a lot closer to ownership interests, to rooting for ownership interests than it does to player interests. Some of that's understandable, right? You want a title. You want a championship. And that's easier to do if a team like the Seahawks has Russell Wilson under a rookie deal, and you're able to sign a bunch more players because you're saving money against the cap. Mm-hmm. It's easier to do if your team is making the right and sound financial decisions. And sometimes, most times, that comes at a cost to the players. But it's also strange to watch happen because it moves fans into rooting for guys who are paying $2.2 billion for franchises and then crying poor. It moves fans to rooting for entities, for corporations that are privately held yet asking for public money when they move from San Diego to L.A.
It's something about
or they move to St. Louis to L.A.
Especially in football, it's because a player can be broken in half at any moment. And rather than just cheering for the next guy in the uniform, there's some stability there if you feel that your interests as a fan are being represented by the people who are cutting the checks and not the people receiving the checks. They say that when in fact, they don't.
It's a cold place to be. It is. It's a cold place to be, to look at the individual interests of players who are, oh, so lucky to be playing a children's game or however you want to frame it. It's very easy to write them off as an individual and root for the laundry instead.
Yeah, and that's before we actually start bringing up the odious oligarchical connections of the owners themselves.
Oh, yeah, put those aside.
I mean, that's what we found out about
put those aside.
Jerry Jones and Papa John's
It's easy to do this stuff without that.
Speaking of which, you see Papa John, it got scrubbed completely. You talk about a non-person. That he has been removed. He has been
from the University of Lowell.
Everything. I mean, out of all of the lore of Papa John's, it's still called Papa John's, but his name isn't referenced in any of their materials. He doesn't have an office anymore. He has ceased to be.
I had read that. I wonder if it's resolved then at Louisville, because I had read that the stadium, though it's named Papa John's Stadium, or whatever Papa John's name is on the park or whatever it is, that even if Papa John's left the naming rights, that he himself, John Schnatter, would be able to rename the stadium whatever he wanted to. Like, that was in the deal.
Right. It had to be hit by his volition, but they negotiated it basically by they made him invoke his prerogative to remove his own name because they just had his
his nuts being squeezed. Yar. What's the Orwellian term again? If we're getting back to a second 1984 reference, unperson.
Yeah, I think it's un.
Is that right?
Aren't you made an unperson? Is
yeah,
that what it was?
It's been a long time since I've read that.
Well, a grandiose term.
Yeah, I have not read 1984 in a
it's
long
been a
time.
Long ago.
I believe it's when you have been taken away, you've been disappeared from
unperson.
Society, and you never
you get
existed.
Vaporized.
Yes.
It's the vaporization thing. Secretly murdered, erased from society, the present, the universe, and existence. That is hardcore, being unpersoned.
Yep, that's kind of what happened to Papa John. So he now we can have the Schnatter Matheny presidential ticket.
I did see that he's leaning back on some of the he's taking his apology back for the language he used on that conference call. So I'm no longer sorry for it. I put it in the right context. Everything's fine. I said what I said, and I meant what I said, despite the latter apology and trying to walk things back as best he could.
Yeah, he said he was forced to say it. Right? I believe he claimed his PR
It was the colonel. The colonel rose from the dead and influenced him in a visitation, you know, like a Dickens novel. Mm-hmm. The colonel's just rattling chains around in his bedchambers and telling
like
John that you
Marley's
bad
ghost?
Words. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let me tell you something there, John. And it's sort of like he's got the white suit and the bolo tie. And
Papa John's just all willing to listen, just sitting attentively at the end of the bed, like, yes, tell me more.
I want you to use the N-word and your
yeah, all right, so I'm going to get a conference call
training.
Tomorrow. I'm in.
At sensitivity training.
Idiot.
That's the thing. It's like you're there for that reason. The whole saying words thing.
Look,
just
a stop
not,
sign. Let me just blow right by
not,
that thing.
Not been kind to him, but it's and frankly, we'll see what the effect is. It didn't the NFL already has pretty much picked that sponsorship clean and
they're no longer
handed it to Pizza Hut, right?
Is it Pizza Hut? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's Pizza Hut.
It's so plug and play. All you have to do is swap out a couple logos.
Generic cardboard pizza.
Right, but you really
throw it in there.
There isn't
good to go.
There isn't much you have to do.
No.
When you just say this instead of this, we will use this.
It markets itself. It's part of the reason that the Green Bay Packers were among every franchise getting $255 million in revenue sharing. It's so easily advertised. It's so easily consumed. All this stuff. It's plug and play, like you said.
That is the largest point, is that the NFL's actual bottom line has never been better. With all the noise, with all of the outrage and the cries of doom and gloom and
boycotts from ownership, not seeing anything coming, being so worried that this is going to, you know why they're reactionary, why they're cutting off their nose to spite their face, because nobody wants to kill the golden goose.
And because
it is gold.
It's both reactive and reactionary in the truest sense of their behavior.
Yeah, I suppose
it is reflexive and reactive and also reactionary. Coming up, we are going to once again have the pleasure of being joined by the erstwhile Heavy Fuel crew, reunited again, Dan McNeil and Terry Bors, as we do transition with the afternoon show on The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.